This is The Guardian.
Today, more people than ever before are dying in the Channel trying to make it to the UK. Why can't anyone stop it happening? At about 2 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon, a fishing boat just off the coast of Calais radioed for help. The crew on board had spotted several people in the water. British and French rescue teams scrambled to search the area, and two men were taken to hospital suffering from hypothermia. At least 27 people died. Among them, there was a pregnant woman and three children. It's thought that most of the victims were Kurds, fleeing persecution in Iraq and Iran. There's a picture that came out later of the boat they travelled in. It's a flimsy grey inflatable, far too fragile to safely make the 21-mile journey across the English Channel. But they'd been desperate enough to try. On Thursday morning, more people, on more small boats, set out to make the same journey. Why would they take such a risk to reach the UK? And why, if the British government says it wants to make the route unviable, are more people making these dangerous crossings than ever? From The Guardian, I'm Hannah Moore. Today in Focus, a tragedy in the Channel. Diane Taylor, for years you've been speaking to people who want to find refuge in the UK, and you've reported on the awful news of these deaths this week. So on a journey like this, where would people be starting out from?
The vast majority of people are camped out either in Calais or Dunkirk, forests, disused warehouses. They've already made an arrangement with smugglers, or if they don't have the money to pay smugglers, they try and cross every night themselves in even more flimsy boats than the dinghies. So the people who pay smugglers wait for a call from the smugglers to say now is the time, and they're then taken to a certain bit of beach and then told to get into a dinghy quickly. There's usually quite a narrow window to organise all this to avoid being caught by the police.
It's late November now. What are the conditions like out on the water at the moment?
It's very, very cold, usually. Even in the summertime, it's freezing cold. Water often comes into the boat. People have to bail out the water.
Someone who made that journey across the Channel earlier this year is Ali. He's 28 and he's come to the UK from Iran. I managed to get through to him on his mobile to try and understand what it was like to make that journey.
I'm Ali. I'm 28 years old. I'm from Iran, south of Iran. I crossed the Channel by a dinghy like 6 months ago. I know that's a dangerous way, but I didn't have any other way to do while my life was in danger. So that was my only way.
Ali's life was in danger in Iran, he says, because of his religion. He's Baha'i. Getting to the UK was the end of a very long and dangerous journey across Europe.
I've applied for asylum in France, but they wanted to deport me and send me back to Germany. And Germany wanted to send me back to Greece. And in Greece, the situation was awful. Because of that, I managed to cross the Channel.
You know, you were camping in that area that was known as the jungle. What happened? Did people come and pick you up and say, right, we've got a boat, get on board?
Normally, people are waiting for the smugglers, for their traffickers. We cannot carry too much stuff with ourselves, just like very small backpack And we will take bus or train to a very cozy beach, which is not too crowded.
So here's what happens. He gets the call from the people working for the smugglers to go to a beach where there's a boat waiting, half buried at the water's edge.
And when the smuggler let us know, okay, come here and take the dinghy out of the soil. So we put it on our shoulders and carried like 15 or 100 meters. The water was shallow at the very first of the beach, and we went to the water, and it was very very cold. But anyway, we were a bit happy because we thought that okay, finally, that's the first step to reach the success. Then after 100 meters, they said, okay, that's enough. You can ride the boat. He started the engine. A lot of water came into the boat. We had like some plastic bowls and drained the water. Just go ahead. Just keep going. And we use Google Maps for navigation.
Imagine how it feels to be stuck on a boat in the middle of the channel. It's early morning, it's freezing cold, and you don't know when or if you'll make it to safety. Luckily, Ali and the others on his boat got picked up and taken back to France. They were fortunate to be alive. But even after going through that, it wasn't long before he tried the crossing again, and that time he was successful.
Journeys can take 10 hours, 12 hours. It's not a sort of direct route. People don't really know, often don't know how to drive the boat, don't really know where they're going. It's all a bit haphazard. Everybody that I've spoken to has said that every minute of the journey was terrifying. You never know if the next wave is going to capsize the dinghy, and that will be it.
We had told the smuggler and told the trafficker that much of petrol is not enough. And we went at the middle of channel, somewhere between France and UK, got run out of petrol. It was like 6, 7 a.m. It was too scary.
They often arrive in Dover or other parts of the south coast of the UK completely drenched by the seawater, chilled to the bone, traumatized, in a state of shock.
I was more happy, but still I was anxious and worried. What will happen? What will happen to me? What? I'm still worried about it, but I'm a bit hopeful.
Diane, to suffer through the sort of crossing that you and Ali have described, it just shows you how desperate people are to make it to the UK and try to start a new life here. What are the main reasons that people are seeking asylum in this country?
Nobody who had a good life in their country would choose this route. It has been said that many of the people are economic migrants, but there are other routes that economic migrants can take. Economic migrants want to hide from the authorities. The people who come on small boats offer themselves up into the hands of the Home Office Border Force as soon as they reach the shore or before they reach the shore. These people want to claim asylum. They're fleeing persecution. They've fled horrible things in countries like Syria, Yemen, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, Sudan, Eritrea. It's no coincidence in the recent Refugee Council report identifying the top 10 nationalities of people coming in small boats that they've all come from war zones or conflict zones.
Of course, I was living under a dictator regime in Iran. Every day of my life was death, life and death, every day. So this one crossing the sea for 2 hours, 3 hours, absolutely nothing.
Because Europe as a whole, not just the UK, is making it more and more difficult for people fleeing conflict zones to seek safety. By the time people get to France, they're in a much worse state. So they've often encountered multiple traumas, both in their home countries and on these difficult journeys. If you've come from an African country and gone through Libya, you could be locked up in Libya for 1-2 years. If you come from the Middle East, you can get stuck in Greece for 1-3 years. I know people who've walked all the way, you know, through 10 countries. They've just walked.
You are not scared for the next trip?
Well, we humans, we are scared. If you're not scared, you have to check yourself with doctor. We have to be scared. So somehow, sometime in life, you have to risk everything.
One asylum seeker who's now in the UK, he said to me, the phrase that everybody uses in Calais is, either I come or I die. And he described how he felt when he reached the UK. And he said, when I came to Britain, I felt a strange relief inside me because I knew that this journey would end either in drowning and death or arriving in Britain. In both cases, the misery would end.
France is a safe country, not one riven by war or conflict. There is no reason why any asylum seeker should come to the United Kingdom directly from France.
One point that some people make, and arguably that our government keeps on making, why do people want to come to the UK? Why don't they make a life at some other point in Europe?
The main reason why people embark on these dangerous journeys to reach the UK is because they have family members here. Also, some people choose to come here because they speak good English and believe that will help them to integrate and to have a secure future here. The vast majority of asylum seekers do not want to come to the UK. We only have 3% of Europe's asylum claims, contrary to, you know, what's portrayed in some parts of the media. The world's refugees are not flocking to our shores. The number has actually been reducing. They're coming in a more visible, photogenic way. When people were climbing into lorries or if they get on a plane, there's nothing much to take photos of.
A few weeks ago, you went to Calais and you spent time in what was known as the jungle, this huge and squalid refugee camp that was demolished some years ago. You spoke to people there, many of whom are still hoping to cross to the UK. What kinds of things did they tell you?
There's only one reason for asylum seekers to be in northern France, and that's to reach the UK. So everybody is completely focused on getting to the UK one way or another. But conditions are very bad. People really suffer a lot there. Regular beatings by the French police, daily evictions of, most people don't even have tents anymore, but they're sort of blankets and very, very few belongings.
And I should say that local officials in Calais have said in the past that the police there adhere to strict rules of ethics. We know that some women died this week trying to make the crossing to the UK from Calais. But is it mainly men who attempt the journey on their own?
Certainly the majority who are travelling are men. And I think the Home Secretary said that the men were elbowing women and children out of the way.
Are single men who are effectively economic migrants. They are not genuine asylum seekers. They are literally elbowing because they're able to pay the smugglers, they're able to get in contact with the gangs, whether it's in northern France or actually in Germany. These are the ones that are elbowing, the women and children who are basically at risk and fleeing persecution. And so,
absolute nonsense. What tends to happen is that the men are part of families, but they don't want their wives and kids to have to make the same horrific journey that they're making. So they try and come first and then hope that then, if they're given refugee status, that under family reunion, the families will come.
More than 25,000 people have crossed to the UK in small boats already this year. That's over three times the number for the whole of last year. And obviously, tens of thousands more people have attempted the crossing and not made it. Why has the number gone up so much?
The reason why we didn't see more crossings last year, I think, is a lot due to the pandemic. So now that pandemic restrictions have eased, the crossings have continued. One of the reasons why there are a lot of crossings is that there's a lot of global conflict.
The government has taken a consistently hard line on this for years, saying that their priority is to stop asylum seekers coming to the UK by illicit routes. How have they gone about trying to achieve that?
There was a particularly big refugee crisis in 2015 with the war in Syria. And according to UNHCR, more than 1 million refugees reached Europe. From that point, governments around Europe, not just the UK, tried to clamp down on refugee movements. The UK government has always believed allowing asylum seekers to come to the UK will not play out well with certain groups of voters, and so they always want to sound tough. In the last few years, security measures around the Channel Tunnel particularly have been ramped up significantly to try to stop asylum seekers hiding themselves in lorries and crossing that way. It happened over a period of time, but probably started around 2018. It hasn't stopped asylum seekers from wanting to cross to the UK because the asylum seekers' problem remains the same. They're still fleeing for their lives, whether a lorry park is sealed up or not. So ramping up security at Channel Tunnel terminals, etc., has simply led to displacement activity of more and more people using more dangerous ways to cross, which is the small boats.
So the number of people attempting to reach the UK has stayed pretty much the same, but they've been forced to take more dangerous routes. Of course, smuggling people to the UK in lorries isn't safe either. We know that over the years, a lot of people have died trying to travel that way. How do the numbers compare?
Yeah, there were certainly fewer deaths that we heard about anyway when people travel by lorry. If asylum seekers can get into a lorry, it's a short journey. It's relatively safe compared to setting off in a small boat on a rough sea.
This is a shared border with France. It's not only the UK that has a responsibility to care for, or some might argue, control the number of people who are trying to cross. What are the French authorities doing?
The French sort of shrug their shoulders because this group of people want to come to the UK. The UK has said over and over again that it either has given or is planning to give tens of millions of pounds to the French authorities to step up border controls to prevent people from crossing. The French say, oh, the border in northern France is 200 kilometres long, we can't police all of it. But people don't cross from the whole of that 200 kilometres. There are certain known crossing points. I don't think the French are too highly motivated to stop people because they know that once they've stopped them, they'll just cross again the next night.
Statement, the Home Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. And with permission, Madam Deputy Speaker, I'd like to make a statement about the tragic drownings that took place in the Channel yesterday.
Yesterday, Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, made a statement in the Commons, repeating an offer that she'd made before for British forces to carry out joint patrols on the French coast.
And I've once again reached out and made my offer very clear to France in terms of joint France and UK cooperation, joint patrols to prevent these dangerous journeys from taking place.
But so far, the French government hasn't taken her up on that offer. You speak to people at NGOs and experts about this all the time.
But the reality is, and you know, we can't get away from this reality, we have to face up to it, is that people have a right under the UN Convention to seek safety in the UK.
What kind of changes do they tell you could make an actual effective difference, could make the policy more humane?
Many NGOs are advocating for safe and legal routes.
The people smugglers rub their hands with glee every time our Home Secretary goes and announces that she's building another fence, because as we've seen time and time again, they can move faster than the police and they will...
Would eliminate the smugglers from the equation to allow people to claim asylum in northern France. There is a UK border in northern France, so it would be possible to do that. And then people could be given a humanitarian visa to come on a ferry to the UK while their asylum claim is processed. But I think it's unlikely the government will go for that.
Coming up, what's happened this week has shocked people, both in the UK and France. But will it change anything? Diane, you've described what our government and the French government are doing on the border. This story is so significant, so sad, and yet so tragically inevitable, really. It's on the front page of just about every newspaper. Do you think what's happened this week is going to make the people in power change anything about how they treat asylum seekers who are attempting to make these sorts of journeys?
The UK government has stuck to the script.
I just want to say that I'm shocked and appalled and deeply saddened by the loss of life at sea in the Channel.
Which is following this tragedy, they will redouble their efforts to smash the business model of the smugglers. Sadly, I don't think it's going to change anything.
But I also want to say that this disaster underscores how dangerous it is to cross the Channel in this way. And it also shows how vital it is that we now step up our efforts to break the business model of the gangsters who are sending people to sea in this way.
It's the UK government that is facilitating the business model of the smugglers. If UK did not have this policy towards asylum seekers in northern France, the smugglers would go out of business in about 5 minutes. So the smugglers are a symptom of UK policy. For as long as this particular policy prevails, the smugglers will thrive. The business model will not be smashed.
What about for the people who are considering making that kind of journey? Does news of these sorts of tragic events get back to them?
Yes, I'm sure that everybody in northern France, every refugee who's hoping to cross, will know about the tragedy earlier in the week. Many people are very well connected in their own communities through WhatsApp, Facebook. I'm sure all the names of the people who died are circulating at the moment in those groups, even before things are officially confirmed. But it absolutely will not deter a single person from crossing.
Ali, you've heard the news this week that 27 people have died making the same journey that you made. How does that feel?
Since last night, some of my friends called me from Greece and asked me, do you know who was the name of the trafficker of that boat? And I asked them, why did you ask it? And they said, we believe that one of our friends was at that boat and we are worried about him.
Oh my goodness. Ali, is there anything else you wanted to say?
Just I got to add that we are real asylum seekers. We are not economical asylum seekers, economical migrants. If we was economical migrants, it would be better for me to stay in my country if it was safe for me and apply for a job secure visa and travel to the UK in a safe way. Not try this long and dangerous journey. Believe me, no one is ready to leave his country. Even my country is the worst country in the world, but my country is my homeland. For sure, I will miss it.
Ali, thank you so much. That was Ali and Diane Taylor, who, over the years, has done some of the most sensitive and impassioned reporting you'll ever read. And she'll carry on covering this story, of course. Please do read her work at theguardian.com. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent, and sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. We'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.